Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
And joining me on the podcast and live on video, if you want to see Vadim in his lovely pink, iron shirt there. It's Vadim Alexander, Head of Healthcare, SP Angel. Yo, fella, how's things?
Yeah, good. How are you, Justin?
Good, thanks. Yeah, let me show you something here. This is quite exciting. This is the AIM All Share Index. I got a little bull in there. This is the AIM All Share Index. And you can see from the bottom here, up. Oh, let me just click on that. Let me just click there. On the bottom, up to here. We are now 20% above the low, which means, Vadim, as you know, that means we are basically in a bull market.
Yeah.
Anyway, it went up above that. It went up to, I mean, a part of that, I think, was because of, what's it called? Keyword Studios, KWS, which was, I think, the second biggest company on AIM, having a takeout bid 60% higher. And that's why it sort of shot up on that day. Okay. But nevertheless, we're still are in that bull market territory. Let's move down. 803 is bull market territory. We're in that, which is a very good sign. Like I said, we've had this rally. Nice consolidation, move back up. We probably need another consolidation now. We'll take us back into bear market. But then the second rally come up here now should be very nice.
The moving average should start moving, you know, trailing it now, which is
good. Exactly.
You can see it turning. You can see it turning, yeah.
I mean, it's not been this far above a 200-day moving average, but, well, since back then, since 2020 pretty much, which is a very good sign. And like I said, I genuinely think, you know, it never goes up in straight lines, but I think, you know, if you start investing, picking the right stocks now over the next 3 to 5 years, you should do very well, I think, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
Talking about some stocks not doing well, Vadim, let me just hide this this floating panel. There we are. This company, which you and I both invested in, news couldn't get any worse.
Yeah,
you just thought it couldn't get any worse there. Plarium, their proposed placing at 1 pence. Which is pre-money valuation of about 2.15 million. 2 million. It was 10 times that, just pre-FDA letter. And so it's crazy. So I'm not sure they raised 5.2 plus, I think, 2, I think. But it's just nuts. I want to ask you.
It wasn't 10 times, Justin. It was almost 100 times. The 2.5 million is the market cap today, right? At which this deal was.
Oh, yes, so 100 times.
It hit almost 200 million.
Yeah.
It was worth 111p at its peak. Yeah. And now we're at 1p.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously, you don't act for these. You're in no way connected with this placing. I just want to point that out so you don't get any hate mail coming towards you.
When they left us, it was 60p. I mean, this is a long time ago. This is years ago.
So what, you were the active broker when they came to the market, were you?
Yeah, we listed them originally at 15p. We listed them at 15p in 2018. Right. In 2018, and we were their nomad and broker until about right before COVID. So 2020, March 2020, I think we did the last placing with them in March 2020.
And each placing was higher than the last placing you did, wasn't it? You know?
Yeah, absolutely. It was we did all of our placings at this is a long time ago, right? We did all of our placings around the 15 to 20p level. And then then they were with us for in the early days of COVID. I remember they left us when they were about 60p. Okay. Yeah. Which was good. You know, it's companies have to do what they have to do, and they graduate, you know, to bigger brokers, and that's all normal. It's all natural. But as far as we're concerned, that was a good evolution. That, yeah. It was a 4-time return roughly from the IPO for investors. And then it kept going, it kept going all the way to 100 and I think almost 120p. Then kind of the negativity started. So the first thing that happened is they had what's known as a CRL, which is a complete response letter from the FDA, which means no, okay, effectively. No, come back to us with some corrections. They did that, they lost a year, burned more money, and then finally got through the FDA, which is a great result. By that point, the problem, this is all afterwards, right? This is all after, they left us. It went all the way to 120p. It was all good. Everything was slated to work. But then the first big hit came when the FDA said no. Then the delays started and the cash burn started to catch up with them. Okay. Mm-hmm. So 1 year on, they finally get the approval from the FDA. A little bit longer. It took until, I think, December. So it was from it was basically a year and a quarter. And then at that point, the market had turned. Do you see what I mean? Yeah. So the market turned sour, shares start declining further, capital, access to capital starts to get restricted, and, it just got into a negative spiral. The difficulty I find, particularly with this last placing, is I would have wished that they raised capital sooner. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like 2 months ago, 4 months ago, 6 months ago. Anything would have been better than waiting to this point and then doing it again at a 75% discount to a very low share price. And the reason is, we've talked about it here, right, Justin?
Yeah, well, explain that.
Talking about it for months, right?
Most people listening to this are retail investors, right? And, most people are outside, the machinations of a placing. We don't get involved in them generally. I think I've been involved in one or two placings in my life. And I tend to like to keep my shares in my ISA, and I don't go for placings. I always go for the market. So how does this get away? 74% discount. How does that work? So does the company say we need to raise money? The brokers say we need to raise money. What's the process here?
Look, it's pretty simple. It's like the company says, okay, we're going for it now, or whatever. We have to go for it. And sometimes choice, companies have a limited runway. Here we've been talking about the limited runway for quite some time, right?
Yeah.
And it was the problem in this story is it was visible to all. Everybody in the market knew. People on podcasts like you and I were talking about it for a year, over a year now, and wondering, what's the best thing to do? And you kind of have to just go for it and raise what you can and at least draw a line under this uncertainty, because this is the problem on AIM in particular. People know that the runway is running out or is limited, and they know that you will have to come back to market. So everyone stops buying and no one's interested in buying and waiting for the placing, right?
Yeah.
So what we've seen and what we've been talking about for all this time is the shares just get eroded. And that's all that's been happening. They've just been getting eroded. And then you end up where you have to end up anyways, which is you have to raise capital. It just, with every minute that passes, weeks, days, months, it just makes that uncertainty even stronger and makes the price pressure at the time of the raise even more difficult. So the discount more punishing, right?
Yeah, but why 73%? Because like I said, pre-money valuation there at 1 pence a share was 2.15. Now you'd suspect that is undervaluing the company. Having said that, right now with lack of commercial contracts, you'd say, well, how much is this worth? How does that come about? How does that valuation come about? Because it seems to me, with a cutting edge technology like this, which I think it is, of course, it's hard. It's having issues getting commercial traction. We know that, but surely is it not worth more than that? That seems to me a hell of a discount. I just think that is, many retail investors say it's a scam. It's something to do with insiders getting some inside cheap shares for free, lining their pockets and stuff. Or is it just a case of there was no investors at any higher level, and that's the only level you can get away at?
Yeah. you know, I don't want to like jump into saying scams and things like, you know what I mean? But the reality, couple of things. One is the market's very difficult, right? So without question, they surely faced a very difficult market. They and their brokers surely faced, you know, a market where there's very little demand. So they probably had to go lower and lower and lower, right? The thing that is a bit strange here is it's true there are a couple of existing shareholders that are, you know, cornerstoning it, right? Yeah. And you have to ask yourself, so put it this way, you know, you're asking me how is a book built, right? So yeah. you usually have your cornerstones in place. They normally dictate the terms of the deal. And to be fair, you know, the cornerstones can say whatever the hell they want. So, you know, if they determine the price, the truth is that's where the capital is, right?
Okay.
But yeah, they're pretty substantial, you know, holders. This is NewChem and Bracco. And, you know, that's usually where the pricing starts. It's true that incrementally, if you can't find more money and you need the full, they raise 10, right? So if you need the full 10 and you've only got 5 from existings and directors, okay, this is all broad brush strokes, right? It's give or take a few hundred grand over and above 5 or minus, you know, plus or minus a few hundred grand. But ballpark, 500 came from two existing cornerstones and directors, and sorry, 5 million, half of it, and then they went out and raised the balance.
5.5 came from them, yes, that's it. So 2.5 from NewChem and 2 million from Bracco, yeah.
And then 300 from existing directors, yeah. Directors, right? So whatever, ballpark that. You have to ask yourself the question: there's, I guess, two scenarios. One is they came up with that price. Two is they didn't want that price, but the rest of the raise determined that price. Do you see what I mean? So the rest of the book wasn't there at any higher price. I don't know what happened. You know, I'll never know which one it was. If it was the incremental capital, then you have to ask yourself, do you really need the 10? Or should you just, you know, take money, less money at a higher price?
Yeah.
We don't know.
So there's many moving parts. You know, in any way, it just seems to me, like I said, now it's you know,
it's very punishing. I mean, it's
it's brutal.
Quite frankly, it's a complete wipeout. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can't sugarcoat this any other way. It is it is what it is. It's that.
Absolutely. They've had a recent order as well for the thing, but system order here recently. What was this from? University of Alabama at Birmingham.
And they've had some orders recently. And, you know, is the technology, we still like the technology. I always did. You know, I guess the way to look at it now, today, this is in no way helps the investors that got, you know, crushed by this last fundraise. But going forward, the 10 gets them somewhere. Is the technology worth whatever, 2.5 million pre-money? I think it's worth more, personally.
Total equity, I could see it's the half year was 12 million, you know? So it was, you know, I think.
I mean, how much of that is intangibles? But look, bottom line is they're recapitalized for some period now. They probably will need more money in the future. I think they've explicitly said that. But this gets them back to having a runway. And they did have some cash already. So, you know, this gives them a chance at some progress. And at these levels, it's just it's kind of the business is free, basically. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So a company, so we talked to last week, and I was very interested to talk to them, was Extruded Pharmaceuticals. Now, explain this. It seems like almost a little bit of an ingenious way. I mean, listen, there's lots of problems, of course. There's cancer is there's so much money goes into cancer because it affects, I think it's 1 in 2, I think, above when it's above a certain age. So everyone knows someone who will have cancer anyway. So there's so much money goes into finding better ways of curing it or managing it. But explain how Extruded works. It's quite I don't know if it's unique, but I've never heard of this before.
So we're acting on this deal. We are basically Extruded. They're proposing reversing into a cash shell called Amur Minerals. And the vote, it's still going to vote. So it still has to be voted through, which is next Wednesday, I think, or Thursday next week. Why we like effectively this deal is the technology is kind of lower risk. if you, it's always high risk when you're dealing with drug development, and so no one's denying that. But in that category, it's relatively lower risk because it's, you're using an existing chemotherapeutic agent, and it's all about the delivery technology. So that's where the extruded comes from. The name extruded. It was the extrusion of the polymer, and it's how they blend the known chemotherapeutic agent, which is generic, meaning that it's already well established with the FDA, with the regulators here in Europe and in the MHRA. So there's no risk about the efficacy of the actual drug component. But the
that's what I took from it. Is the safety and efficacy of the drug they're using is fine. It's FDA approved. It works. Yeah. It's just a better way of delivering it, isn't it?
Correct. You know. Exactly. Yeah. So it basically, the extrusion process is how you blend the drug with the polymer. Okay. And the idea of the delivery technology is extended slow release, if you like. So, and then it's also how you're using it. And in this particular case, what they're doing, so you've got, you know, the pharma risk at some level is reduced because it's a known drug. Its safety and tolerability profile is established. Its efficacy is established. Okay. It's a chemotherapeutic. So what they're using it for is glioblastoma. So it's to be they're effectively like little pills, or if you like seeds, they call them chemo. Yeah. Product is called chemo seed. And these little seeds are then implanted at the site of the tumor that's been removed during surgery for brain tumors. Okay. Mm-hmm. And you're going in anyways for the surgery. So it's not, it drastically, that doesn't require a procedure. The procedure is taking place anyways. And what you're trying to do is you're trying to kill off any residual cells that you're leaving behind after surgery. Okay.
Yeah.
So you remove the tumor and you put in, you coat the area of the tumor removal with these seeds. And this is hence the importance of the extrusion technology and the slow release, is that you can't just pour in chemotherapy, right? That's it's very lethal, chemotherapy, right? So you need some extended release at the site of the tumor, and that's what this technology is all about. It's all about delivering the chemotherapy over a period of time post-surgery, and then the polymer biodegrades, so you don't need to go back in and remove anything afterwards. It goes away after whatever it is, 6 weeks time. Okay.
Yeah, well, it's amazing that, because like I say, with normal sort of chemotherapy or whatever, there is an ongoing IVs or oral sort of intakes, but with this, like I said, they degrade quite naturally and safely inside the body.
Has to be determined still, right? So
yeah.
That's all. That's,
oh, okay.
Yeah, that's what they're proposing to do. The money in this cash shell gets them to into phase two trials. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So say doing phase two, I suppose that they can get to phase two because, of course, there's no worry about the safety and efficacy of the drug they're using. But the thing that's good about this is that this is one indication, because they can use this on different parts of different diseases and different drugs.
Correct.
But it's just the delivery system you use on many different, as long as if you're having, intrusive surgery, then it can be implanted, essentially. That's
exactly,
the thing, isn't it?
Yeah? Exactly. Yeah. So they're second and third indications. So, as therapies, I think they're going after prostate cancer and pancreatic cancer. And it's similar. You implant the seeds at the location of the tumor. Same process, but you could use a different drug. Definitely. You can use another chemotherapeutic agent. I mean, the reason for the first indication is that part of the problem, since you mentioned IV and chemotherapy, is that the blood-brain barrier is a very, we've naturally evolved to protect ourselves from anything that gets into our blood supply, into our blood from getting to our brain. Okay? And that's what's known as the blood-brain barrier. Well, it actually acts very well against chemotherapeutic agents and prevents chemotherapeutic agents in getting to the tumor if you have brain cancer. So this is a neat way of getting, because the surgery is happening anyways, this taking place anyways, of getting away from the blood-brain barrier and bringing the chemotherapeutic agent to the tumor in situ post-surgery. So for any cancerous cells that remain. So, what I like about it essentially is, well, a couple of things, but one is that it's a lower risk. Don't get me wrong. Everything is high risk in this whole area of drug development. And if you think about it, any kind of brain implants is still a high risk endeavor. But relatively speaking, it's not a drug risk. We know what the drug does. You know what I mean? So the other things that I like is, obviously, this goes straight into phase two. And their proposal is, the proposed timeline is to commence a trial in 2025, I think.
Yes, is it clinical trial Q4 2025? Yes. So,
yeah.
Exactly. But H2 clinical trial application in H2 of this year.
Yeah.
And commence phase two. Yeah. Phase two, straight to phase two. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's it. So, but the difference with this phase two, and so, you know, this all has to do with the indication. Glioblastoma is not a very well treated cancer. Okay. There's very limited options. That allows for an accelerated approval potentially after this phase two trial. So you could have an MHRA UK approval on the back of this one trial being a pivotal trial. So that therein lies kind of why we see this as a lower risk option compared to its peers. You know?
Yeah, but also the valuation.
Yes,
I know about I know quite a bit about a whole high potential stocks. I don't mean this degrading. I'm talking, if you want to make good money quickly, it can be high risk, these stocks, very high risk, but they can be high reward as well. But you've got to be careful about not tricking lots of money in, because it could go wrong. But it's like, what is it, 7-8 million market cap?
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing about this is that, you know, for a something going into a potential pivotal trial, the valuation is extremely low. The total deal value is, I think, 7.5 million post listing.
Yeah,
plus, they're not raising any money. They have enough money to get them through, whatever it is, that at least the first year and a half, maybe up to 2 years, at which point they will hopefully have achieved commencing that trial, and they will be a full-fledged clinical business at that stage. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
And the other thing is, if they have visibility, like if they, by that point, we'll know whether the MHRA, discussions with the MHRA have determined whether this will be deemed a pivotal trial that they can get an approval on. See what I mean?
Yeah. And this is happening, what, end of this month? Was when the vote is?
It's imminent. It's in a week, within a week.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, but do you know, I often in the book, I've got a publishing deal with my book, and I talk about in the past when I've done well on companies that are hope by potential. Generally, they are around 20 million, sub 20 million. That's when you get almost multi-bagger potential. Because, like I said, hope by potential was all about the potential. But the potential has to be huge, because getting to commercial success is very tricky, but they can rise very quickly from that level just on the story alone. It's well priced. You know, it's good value here.
It's definitely well priced. If you look at other phase one, two type assets out there, well, this is a phase. This will be a phase two asset business.
Yeah.
I mean, it's priced like a preclinical business.
Yeah. And I got a bit of stick last week because I genuinely asked about Avacta, because the other company I know in this area on AIM is Avacta.
Yeah.
In fact, they got news up today, actually, about phase one. And I didn't mean it in any derogatory way, but there are some fans of Avacta who are literally blind faith fans. And you must say anything about Avacta. In fact, Andrew Webb, the CEO of Extruder, was very kind towards them, and he said very positive things. And first of all, he said, you know, there's not just one cancer, and there's not just one treatment. You know, there's many different treatments needed to deal with cancer. It's, you know, it's a multi, there's different cancers, basically. You know, so, and he was very kind about Avacta, but nevertheless, I got attacked on social media, so I went back at them. But, you know, like I said, I welcome any company in this area, you know, trying to solve this issue of cancer, trying to find a better way in the world of cancer. There'll never be a silver bullet.
That's just, we all have to accept that. It's the same types of cancers, we need multiple treatments, because we've all heard of personalized medicine and patient stratification. Okay. So what that means is, you know, the patient population is heterogeneous. It's not the same. Everyone is different and every cancer is different. So we need multiple strategies. The future, hopefully, will be one where we have cocktails of drugs that are can be switched in and out for different patients. And you do all kinds of tests on the tumor and on the patient to determine which drugs will work best for this particular patient. So you're absolutely correct. It's an open field in the sense that we need all these solutions and as many as possible so that we can have this cartridge, you know.
Yeah.
Per patient, you plug in all the different, you know, cartridges that are relevant to that patient, those different drugs.
So they've said here, successful completion of first cohort and dosing of three patients, the second cohort in arm two, Vector's AVA 6000 phase one trial. And they are, I mean, Vector's using a different sort of technique here. So they're using a peptide drug conjugate form of doxorubin. So doxorubin is a well-known sort of, you know, chemotherapy drug. Yeah. They're using sort of warheads and stuff. They're saying they're in phase one here. Phase one. I thought it was phase 1A. I'm sure I read before it was phase 1A, but I don't know what the difference is. Maybe it's a different thing. But I'm just saying, you know, if you look at the Avacta's done, you know, a lot of support, even though it's come off a little bit of recent times, it's still, just looking at valuations wise, it's still around 145 million.
It goes to show
it's a different thing, you know.
It's a different area,
probably a bit more upside as well, but yeah, a bit more risky, you know. But anyway,
they are in a hot area of these conjugate drugs, you know. Another one we've looked at in the past and we've discussed here is Bivictrix, which is antibody drug conjugate, which is all the rage now, you know. It's an antibody is a peptide also. Theirs is different. Avacta's is different, but it's the same idea. Avacta's has to do with, they're all involved in getting drugs delivered. So the payload, which is their chemotherapeutic agent in Avacta's case, is a known like we were saying 2 seconds ago, the known chemotherapeutic agent, but they're using a peptide attached to it. Okay. And that's the conjugate. The conjugate is, you're conjugating the two together. Okay.
Yeah.
But so that you only deliver the payload when you have certain conditions met, if you like.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
So with antibody drug conjugates, the antibody gets you to the target and it only releases the drug when you hit the target. You see what I mean?
Very clever, isn't it?
It's amazing. It is. It's all about the issue of chemotherapeutic agents being very toxic to good cells, which you don't want. You know what I mean? So you want to get them to the bad cells and deliver them there alone.
That's why they talk about precision. Their warheads, their precision, so precise on the actual target, rather than just, like you say, I mean, my father had chemotherapy, my mother did, and you get knocked out, you know, and literally don't want to go through it again. You lose your hair, you lose your appetite, you feel like absolute rubbish, and you feel like you're dying, because you are. Your cells are being killed, and it's indiscriminate, isn't it, pretty much?
It's all a race, cells. Exactly. It's a race to killing the tumor cells over your own cells, right?
Yeah.
But the beauty of precision targeted approach is that not only can you hit the cells, you know, and not the other cells with more precision, literally, it's that you can give a much higher dose. Sorry, you can give a much higher dose locally. Do you see what I mean?
Well, so, in fact, they said that here. I think they said it's 3.5 times the dose with no. I think it was about 3.5 times there. But a maximum tolerated dose has not been reached in a 3-weekly dose escalation study, despite dosing approximately 3.5 times the normal level of doxorubicin in the highest final dose. Phase 1A of the arm 1 was phase 1A. Okay. Yeah, so, I mean, that's looking good. So, like I said, they get 3.5 times the dose, and there's no sort of problems with side effects, all that stuff. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
It's going in the right direction. No, I do welcome, you know, any company that can do this. I mean, it does take a lot of money, it takes a lot of time, but it's worth it if it works out, because, you know, the people will save, and
we need the tools.
And family, the people will save, you know.
We definitely need the tools, and the more the merrier. It's going to be a race of, it's an arms race, effectively.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, with the R1 and 2 race there. Anyway, let's just leave it on the chart and in fact, look at that. The bull market has started. Look how far down we are still. You know.
Well, that's it. I mean, and what do bull markets do? They bring higher highs.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? So not only the top of your chart there on the left, we should be exceeding that in the next cycle, right?
Yeah, exactly. Take your positions, everyone. Good companies, just edge in, because I think over the next 3 to 5 years, it's going to be, you know, a good time. And traditionally, historically, like I say, if you look back at the ending of a bear market, the start of a bull market, those are generally the best times to start investing. You know, historical returns are massive compared to any other time in the market. But also, by the way, you also tend to get, towards the end of a bull market, you do tend to get a massive rally up. And that's what everyone thinks. It's not the frothy top of a bull where, you know, when everyone thinks it's never going to go lower and everyone's chucking all their money in. And you tend to find that's when new retail investors come in who've never invested before, who are seeing on the news and everything, stock markets in new highs, and they're tempted in by it, by the top. They tend to buy the top because a lot of people sort of hear about it. And so now is the time to be investing, not at the top in a few years' time. But anyway, marvelous stuff. Vadim, thanks for that. And we'll speak to you next week.
Excellent. Thanks, Justin.
The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.